Welcome to a special season of Napkin Scribbles, a podcast by Arthur and Professor Leonard Sweet. This season, Professor Sweet and Portland Seminary of George Fox University is proud to present Sex in the Sacred. Can faith be sexy? Join Professor Sweet as he scribbles out his formative thoughts on sensual orthodoxy. This season, the listener and the learner will get an intimate view on how an idea is conceived into a project and then midwifed into a book. We hope you enjoy this special season of Napkin Scribbles.
Humor is dead sexy. The number one reason people say they fall in love with someone, it surprised me when I learned this. Quote, he, she made me laugh. Laughter is a key sign that the reign of God is present, at least in the mind of Jesus. Jesus' followers free people to laugh. To be a serious Christian means you don't have to take everything so seriously, especially yourself. This does not mean that some Christians haven't gotten this wrong. John Lennon, the Beatle, joked that he gave up going to church after the vicar threw him out for laughter. I don't think that ever happened, but that was his reason for not going to church. And for a while, he still went to church after that. But he said he went in the temple of his own head. I, too, have met some Christians born without a funny bone. It's hard to share a meal around a table and be solemn and dull. But who hasn't attended some church banquet? So sepulchral, so funereal. It's understandable why our ancestors primed the ulnar nerve of their guests with jesters and buffoons, hired professionals to make people laugh. Mirth and merriment not only help with good digestion, but with physical and mental well-being. Humor stands as one of the best evidences the brain is working well. And it is itself a test of dementia. Humor stands as one of the best evidences the brain is functioning at full throttle. In fact, they now tell us that laughter can save your life. Laughter strengthens your immune system, uplifts your mood in positive directions, promotes hormonal balance, releases enzymes necessary for health and wholeness and self-organizing systems. A church that is humorless is harmonyless. A humorous people is a harmonious people. Few things, I think, are sexier than a white-toothed smile. The most attractive expression anyone can show is a quick smile. Did Jesus smile? Now, that is a very complex question. It seems like an easy one to answer. But in the Roman culture of Jesus' day, smiling lacked social significance as a gesture. You had laughter abounding. People laughed. But open smiling that showed teeth was problematic, partly because teeth were so malformed and decayed, and partly because baring of teeth used to be a hostile gesture, and partly because loose lips and open mouths suggested something a little more salacious than serious. So people were resistant to opening their mouths, so resistant that a word was exploited to get them to do it. And this took place in the historical time span relatively recently. That word was cheese. You can't say cheese without opening up your mouth and showing your teeth. So the answer to the question of did Jesus smile is maybe no, if you mean by smile what we mean by smile, but yes, if you mean did the ends of his mouth arc upward at times in delight and desire, did his eyes gleam and glisten with humor and laughter. Nothing tingles between the shoulder blades, shivers up the spine, or charges up the spirit as a smile. Share a smile, even a toothless one. The world needs it. You need it. And you look more sexy when you do it. As preachers, you are never more appealing than when you smile. Your smiles are blessings. Your smiles can be more sanctifying than your words. Your smiles can be more fortifying than your sermons. Smile. Jesus loved humor and used it constantly. Jesus used humor both to sharpen dull edges and smooth out tangled angles of theology, and there were a lot of them in his day. His wordplay on gnat and camel is mostly missed because no one knows the Aramaic, G-A-L-M-A and G-A-M-L-A, the speck of sawdust versus the log of lumber. The eyes of a is another wordplay. How symbolic is it that the church is founded on a pun? Jesus is punning Peter's name rock, where the Greek Petros, which means the giant chief cornerstone of Herod's temple, is paired with the Petra, or little boulder upon which even a house couldn't be built. Petros upon this Petra, I'll build my church. When James and John sounded off about the disciples being denied hospitality by a Samaritan city, they asked Jesus if he wanted them to call down lightning, fire from heaven to punish the city. Well, Jesus told them no, to find another place to sleep. But from then on, Jesus liked to call the two brothers sons of thunder, because they were the thunder ones, and he was supposed to provide the lightning. It was an inside joke that most would have missed in Jesus' day, as we still do today. Many of Jesus' stories are dripping with humor that we miss because, like the woman mixing yeast, we don't know that 3 measures of flour is enough for 50 pounds of bread. Even the earliest disciples of Jesus enjoyed a rich and invigorating laugh life, which sometimes got them in trouble. In his 15th homily on the letters to Hebrews, John Chrysostom confronted his 4th century congregation with their habit of laughing in church at what he deemed inappropriate moments. These are his words. "For the church has been filled with laughter. Whatever clever thing one may say, immediately there is laughter among those present. The marvelous thing is that many do not leave off laughing even during the very time of prayer." And so Chrysostom scolded them while reading out in disgust a list of biblical episodes at which his congregation was prone to laugh out loud. This is priceless for a historian, by the way, when you get somebody doing your work for you. Chrysostom even complained that there are some persons so dissolute and silly as even during this very rebuke to laugh. In other words, as he wrote this up, he's saying that, you know, some of you right now, as I'm rebuking you, are laughing about it. Chrysostom wasn't opposed to laughter in theory, especially it helps unmask idols and defend holy places against devils, which is really what gargoyles and misericords with their distorted laughter and adolescent humor were designed to accomplish. Besides, how can a disciple of the one who commanded us to become like children be opposed to levity and play and jest? When Jesus promised a harsh future to those who harm or dampen the spirits of little ones, he was issuing a woebegone warning to anyone whose solemnity scorches the last jot of frivolity from a congregation's soul. As his dying words, Welsh Bishop St. David, who lived from 500 to 589, and is known as the patron saint of Wales, gave a lesson in littleness to his monks. He said this: "Be joyful, keep the faith, and do the little things." Well, joy and laughter are large in life's littles. It is our faithfulness in the little things that reveals the greatness of our love for the one who loved us first. What's most ignored about the incarnation? The joke that the very Son of God would want to share his resurrection life with bad jokes like you and me. If the world is one of God's jokes, we humans are God's bad jokes. But a bad joke can be as funny as a good one. And this actually is the plot behind semiotician Umberto Eco's medieval murder mystery, The Name of the Rose. A villainous monk named George poisoned anyone who came upon the one book in the monastery library that proposed that God laugh. The detective who solved the murders asked George what made him so scared of laughter that he would kill to keep the book secret. You cannot eliminate laughter by eliminating the book. But George defended himself by claiming laughter is weakness, corruption, the foolishness of our flesh. But the function of laughter is reversed in this book. It is elevated to art. The doors of the world of the learned are open to it. It becomes the object of philosophy and of perfidious theology. As a devoted bibliophile, killing people was a less serious crime than destroying a book, even an evil one. Paradox is one of the greatest sources of laughter. In fact, the way people handle paradox, the moment you're born, you begin to die. The moment you die, you're born into eternity. The way people handle that is to joke and jest about it, or cry. sublime tragedy. There is nothing more alluring than a person or community not afraid to savor and shrive the sweetness and the sting, the sublimity and the tragedy. Here's another paradox. You can't knock someone down without lifting and puffing yourself up. That's why personal attacks and condemnations are so dangerous to the soul. You can't laugh at yourself without building someone else up. That's why laughter can be such a builder and healer of community. Is there anything more captivating than a person who can laugh to themselves and at themselves? Comedian and centurion George Burns wrote a book called Dr. Burns' Prescription for Happiness. But most of it is him laughing at himself or his printing of his friends laughing at him. Like this one from colleague Steve Allen, another comedian. I was very excited about George's last week because I thought it was. When people commented on how marvelous it was that George Burns was still alive in his 90s and was never without a cigar, he replied about the rumors of his death, I can't die. I'm booked. Might laughter be a form of glossolalia? Of speaking in tongues? Laughter is a public confession of the limits of language and a public profession of the indispensability of utterances that come not from speech, but from deep inside and from the spirit. Whereof we cannot speak, thereof we can laugh. The gargoyles gurgle and gargle what the steeple can only point to in spires of silence and splendor. What about those who claim to have been born without a funny bone? Give it up. Even chimps can have a sense of humor and laugh hilariously at slapstick humor in films, as you've seen them doing probably on YouTube. Sigmund Freud's classic study of the dreams demonstrates that dreams love puns. And since every part is enfolded in every other part, puns even have a generative power to develop dreams. So like all laughter, puns are subversive because they mention without mentioning, they argue without arguing, they, in the crucible of creative play, they produce new meaning. So our love of the world is not a blind love of mindless love, but a lucid and ludic love. A love that sees the madness of evil and the world, but that sees through that madness the potential, the playful, and the promise of the kingdom of God. Is there anything sexier than that?
Thank you for joining us on this special season of Napkin Scribbles. To join the conversation, make sure you look us up on Facebook and Twitter at Napkin Scribbles. This week's Napkin Scribble is brought to you by Portland Seminary of George Fox University. For more information, join them on the web at portlandseminary.org. For Arthur and Professor Leonard Sweet, happy scratching and scribbling.